It's hard to believe we're already in summer. This is, I am in Texas. And so, as I always like to joke, our 2 weeks of spring with violent springs here in Texas. You know, we have, you hear about on news or whatever, you have thunderstorms and tornadoes. And we do, we have violent springs and we have hail storms. And, but the payoff of that is, as it were, is that spring doesn't last very long. It's longer than 2 weeks, but that's what it seems like. When you live here, it seems like we'd go winter, and then there's 2 weeks of spring, then summer, and summer goes a long time. And then there's 2 weeks of fall, and then winter, which is the second longest season. It's hot already. It's hot already. I'm sitting here in the prestigious recording studios for the Parish of the Patriots branch of Radio Albion, aka my bedroom. But it's very prestigious, and I'm sweating because honestly I could run the air conditioner, but then I had to take the extra step to, you know, filter out the background noise, and my laziness for not wanting to filter out the background noise has exceeded my desire not to sit here and sweat. So I'm going to sit here and sweat and knock this show out. I appreciate you joining. This is the 328th installment of the Parish of the Patriots. It's a lot of hours of these discussions. I appreciate all of you who have stuck with us and still found it somewhat interesting. People don't realize how hard it is. You know, people get tempted to think, well, I got to do one of these. This is easy stuff to do. Maybe for the first time you do it, but by hour number three, you're going to have a hard time not repeating the same thing over and over. That's why I do repeat the same thing sometimes, but dude, it'd be worse. 328 hours, of course, you're going to say the same stuff at some point. I do, though, make every effort for it to be fresh, informative, entertaining, funny, you know, a little bit of everything. That's why I enjoy doing it. And hopefully you enjoy listening to it. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. I got one thing and one thing only, and that's the snail mail address here in the description page on Radio Albion for the Parish of the Patriots. You can go down and look at the, skip through the description of the show, which I always assume nobody actually even reads. And there it is. I got snail mail. You can disregard the whatever crypto addresses are on the website. Those are Sven's from years ago. I don't have access. If you send that to something to that, now, I'm sure at some point he can access it, but I have nothing. I've got snail mail. That's it. That's all I'm going to have. So, or at least that's all I planned to have. So, yeah, do that. It's appreciated. We don't have a listener supporter mailbag because there is no. It's all empty. It's all good. We just keep on. We keep on trucking. Of course, you know we have a Christian-specific segment. That's going to be very roughly halfway. I'm going to get into that a little earlier this week because I don't really have a lot I want to even talk about here in the first part of the show. The first part of the show, we just talk about whatever I feel like talking about. And I could go on again. It was one of those things. It's like I can go on about this Middle East stuff. I've been doing shows on that. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, of course, is doing shows, and he actually knows what he's talking about versus me and just my humble opinions. My last two Monday Daily Nationalists have gotten into all of this. It's one of those fine lines. It's like, that is the big news, so not talking about it. You know, it's like people expect to hear about it. And instead, I'm just rambling on about something else. And yet, you know, just going on about the same thing that you can hear about anywhere else, maybe that gets old. I don't know. I don't really feel like talking about it, honestly. I've been covering it a lot. And we had this, Iran struck a U.S. base, and apparently they called in advance, texted, we're going to launch some missiles in an hour. Y'all might want to get out of there. More theater. I don't know. I'm going to talk about something else. I don't know what else. Maybe we'll just talk about philosophy, life and death or something. Because I really don't feel like talking about this anymore. I do think it's funny, though. No, I'm not talking. That means I'm going to go ahead and talk about it. I do think it's funny, though, because you're regular people. You, me, because we're the same. I'm on this side of it. Y'all are listening. I do appreciate you listening, and we're the same. And most people everywhere are the same. You know, yeah. Most people want the same thing. They just want to live their lives, be left alone. You know, like I told somebody the other day, I said, nobody wants more. Nobody wants more war. We want more money. We want to do a little better in life. You know, we want to make a little more money. We want to provide for our families a little better. We want to be able to watch, you know, everybody wants to watch their kids grow up. They want to go on with their lives. We're told this wonderful democracy system is about the will of the people. Well, the will of the people is not a mystery. Everybody I know, for the most part, I mean, I guess, you know, you run into lunatics once in a while, but for the most part, normal people that I know in my everyday life, and you too, it's not a mystery what people want. They want to do a little better economically. They want their families to be safe. They want to live their lives. And yet, you would think, we're told on the one hand that this system is all about the will of the people. Well, the will of the people isn't real hard to figure out. And yet we never get what we want, do we? The people, when do the people get what they want? Israel gets what they want every freaking time. You can take that to the bank. But you and me and the rest of us, they act like they're oblivious to what the hell we want. They have no clue. It ain't hard to figure out. And here's something else to keep in mind, because they put so much effort into demonizing the other. People in Iran, people in China, people in Russia, people in Ukraine, I'm talking regular people, not assholes running the government, they want the same thing you do. If you go find some jungle bushman in Africa living in a mud hut, at the end of the day, you know what Bagunga wants? He wants to do a little better in life, maybe to have 3 goats instead of 2, and to do a little better. He may have a whole different world, you know, culture and way of living, but at the end of the day, Bagunga wants the same thing you do on a different scale and according to his culture. You know, those Palestinians getting bombed to shit, they just really, when it comes down to it, you know, they really, if they had their choice, they would just live a better life. They wouldn't be digging their dead kids out from under some rubble. They would be sending their kids, you know, watching their kids growing up and having a potentially better life than they have. That's what people want. We never get it, do we? I guess some people feel like they are, but by and large, nobody feels like that. And yet we're supposed to believe that this system represents us, that there's no, but how many times have we heard that? We grew up with this mantra, didn't we? You, me, we grew up, there's no better form of government in the world. There's no better system in the world than our republic, democracy, values of who we are, whatever bullshit they decided to feed us. And yet we never get what we want. If this system's so great, look, I'm not saying the government is your daddy and your parent and should take care of you and babysit you. That's simplistic thinking for low IQ individuals, people who don't want to take responsibilities for their actions. You know, for the vast majority of normal people, look, we're willing. Your normal run of most people. And again, they highlight these outliers to demonize the other. These people all just want to be on welfare and lay around and do nothing. That's all they want. No, they don't. Most of them don't. Yes, there are some people like that. For the vast majority of people, if the government would get the hell out of the way and quit burdening everybody down, and just let people quit making so damn many rules to where people can actually go out there and do something, maybe make their lives a little better themselves. They're not even asking. Most people ain't even look. They ain't even wanting the government to make their lives better for them. They just want to get the hell out of the way so maybe they have a chance to do it themselves. Quit coming up with a new rule, a new law, a new regulation to get in the way. This is what people want. Ain't nobody want no war. Oh, I mean, I say nobody. They do. But the regular people don't. What do you get out of it? What do any of us get out of this bullshit? Nothing. We don't get nothing. They send a kajillion dollars to this welfare state in the Middle East. And you can't afford your doctor bill. You got to watch your roads. I saw a news clip this morning. I am actually recording this on the day of the show, by the way. I'm not doing it over the weekend. I saw a news clip this morning, a street cam or whatever, and I think it was in Missouri, and the street had buckled up into like a ramp, and this person comes driving down through their car, and the city's answer, by the way, or the highway department, I don't know, it looked like a bigger road, but they called it a street, so I'll assume it was a city street somewhere in Missouri. The city's answer to the fact that the highway had buckled up like 6 feet or something was to put an orange cone on the peak of it. You're supposed to see that and understand that, hey, the road is buckled up and is now a ramp. And this person's driving along in their car and they hit this thing and literally go airborne. Boom. Talk about destroy the suspension in your car. We can't fix resisting the urge to insert colorful language here. They can't fix the damn roads. But they can send a kajillion dollars, continue to send all this money and weapons to this welfare state in the Middle East. So they can do more war that none of us want. Can't pay your doctor bill, can't have decent streets, but they always got money for more wars. And that's the one thing none of us really want. When the hell am I going to see this by the people, for the people bullshit that they fed me since I was in kindergarten? When are we going to see it? When do we see the by the people for the, because I've been waiting and I ain't seen it. Have you? When do we see the part? Not talking about during campaign season when they come out and sell you what they, you know, what they're not going to do. They know they're not going to do it. Not that. No, I'm talking in your day-to-day life. When the hell are we going to get what we want? Because it ain't that hard to bring. They act like it's complicated. Again, this is one of the reasons they show you outliers. They'll put somebody on there that says the government needs to pay all my bills and they need to pay all my hospital bills and all that. They put that out there so you'll be like, well, that's crazy. They always want you to think. They'll hand you two extremes and they'll tell you those are your choices. The idea is to keep you from looking at everything in the middle. You know? It's same in politics. They will tell you your only choices are what you've got now and full on Soviet Union communism. Now, which do you want? You either want what we've got or you want Soviet communism. And they got shills to promote this. You're only because they want you to see, they want you to stare at your two false choices and ignore everything else, all the multitude of possibilities that exist in the middle of it. It's intentional. Give the people a false choice. And then, well, what do you want? Do you want Bolshevik communism or do you want current America? Well, obviously, this is the best system in the world. Well, compared to Bolshevik communism, yeah, I guess it would be. The problem with that is there are a whole lot of other choices besides that, that they don't want you thinking about that. Hell, if you had some other option, you might accidentally get something that you want. Talking to me about these false choices, how many times do you remember being in school or you hear somebody, usually a conservative, thinking they talk about, you know, democracy, kind of the brilliant founding fathers? And how do you look at the shit we have today and claim the founding fathers were brilliant? This is, they'll consider this some sort of blasphemy to talk down about the founding fathers. Look, yeah, I get it. The system has been subverted and whatnot. But I think the argument could very well be made that it was subverted from the beginning. When you really look back on it, there really wasn't much wrong with the Articles of Confederation. But we got our ancestors got sold a bill of goods with this Constitution thing. But anyway, setting that aside, how many times have we been told, have you heard this line that democracy, that's why we have a republic. That's why the brilliant founders set up this republic, because you see, a democracy can only last as long until the people figure out that they can vote themselves money out of the public coffers. I grew up hearing that shit, and you have too. The problem is, this is why we have a representative republic. The problem with a democracy is the people will figure out how to vote themselves tax money, and then the government will go broke and collapse. How's that republic working out for you? You know, they're like grammar Nazis on the internet. Oh, you misspelled this word. That means your entire point is invalid because you misspelled this word. You put an apostrophe on there and it's not supposed to be, so your entire point doesn't count. We don't live in a democracy. We live in a representative republic. How's that working out for you?
A democracy can only last as long as the people can figure out they can vote themselves tax money. Who do?
Oh, yeah, well, who's voting for sending more money to Israel? I'd rather the people had a vote and could vote themselves tax money than we don't have a vote and they give all of that money to Israel, to the military-industrial complex, to whoever the hell else. They're giving money to George Soros, who already got plenty, so that he can run these NGOs to advocate for things that absolutely nobody wants. Yeah, this republic thing. Thank you for correcting me on that, Mr. Conservative. I didn't know I lived in a representative republic. I'm so stupid. How the hell is that working out for you, by the way? I totally remember when I went to my representative and said, please take more money from me and give it to Netanyahu. That's where I want my money to go. Don't worry, I'll just buy some new shocks for my car as I beat it to death on these roads that are third world tier. No problem. I'm sure as hell getting what I want. No, we never get what we want. AIPAC gets what they want. The military, the defense contractors sure as hell get what they want. The pharmaceutical industry sure as hell gets what they want. You know, when do we get around to the rest of us? Because there's a hell of a lot more than us than there are of them. When do they finally get around? The answer is never. Under this system, never. They never get around to us. And it's so in your face, and people keep buying into it. They do. They keep buying into this. If I vote harder this time, this time, you know, people always make that comparison to Charlie Brown and that whole stick of, you know, Lucy kicking the football away. Hey, Charlie Brown was just a simp. You know, he was probably thinking, well, we're going to be older in a few years, and who knows, Lucy may be fine. He might get something out of it. We don't ever get anything out of this. And people keep expecting like somehow it's suddenly going to start working in a way different than what we have observed. Look, I've been around a lot of years and I can tell you it ain't going to be any different. It's been this way my whole life. For the most part, it has gotten worse because they used to put a little more effort into, you know, putting on a better show. I always say this is like these TV shows where they can't come up with new ideas for a show anymore. So they just bring back old shows with new actors and act like it's fresh. All new episode of MacGyver. What? I thought MacGyver went off the air 30 some odd years ago. What? This is just the new MacGyver. More politically correct than the old MacGyver. Whatever the hell. I don't know. We get this. It's the same old story is the point. There's no original writing anymore. Yeah. It's more absurd and clownish. But I've been hearing about the most important election my whole life, and never have I seen anybody get what they want. Aside from in the 90s they got rid of the national 55 mile an hour speed limit. That is, I always talk about that because it's so absurd. It's the one thing I can remember an election bringing about something the people wanted. They hated the 55 mile an hour speed limit, and they did get rid of the national 55 mile an hour speed limit. That's it. That's the only thing in my entire lifetime that I remember an election, the people got something they wanted. It sure wasn't a big thing, but it's something. Which in and of itself speaks volumes, doesn't it? I don't know. And you know, I don't know if you've heard of dead internet theory. It's a theory that, you know, like a lot of the comments and stuff you see on the internet and things you see posted on the internet aren't even people anymore. These are just bots. And there may be some truth to that. I don't know. It makes you wonder. You know, maybe some of this is just AI driven. Maybe some of this is just bots. Because like with all of this, you know, of course, Trump's president now, you know, he's the lead actor in this shit show now. And you see Team D shills. And again, these may just be bots. And they're on there acting like this just started. This is what you get. You voted for Trump. Do these people actually think that if there was a Team D lead actor in this story, the story itself would be different? If we just voted for Kamala, you would have gotten, we would be totally getting what we want now. The Biden people, for 4 years, they were jerking all their liberal base around, telling them, oh, we're totally going to do this student loan debt forgiveness. How did that work out for you? Just about the same as conservatives just waiting for that less regulation or smaller government or whatever the hell to come around. Keep on waiting. You're gonna be waiting a long time. Because if there's one fundamental thing that defines this system that you live under, you, me, the average person out here, we never get what we want. We're, for the most part, we're irrelevant. For the most part, we're viewed as a potential obstacle to their plans. We're an inconvenience. We got to put up with these mouth breathers out here. We have these grand plans that just so happen to always envision, you know, always entail them getting wealthier. We just have to deal with these people out here. Of course, they're depopulationists. We're an inconvenience. And that, you know, it's that view, that attitude is reflected in their policies. Anyway, You are going to get you what you want here, though, at the Parish of the Patriots. You're going to get the Christian-specific segment, and that's what we're going to move into. You're just going to keep it trucking. See, because we're not like this system. We do give you what you want, so, whether you like it or not. Anyway, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pieces. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. I'm trying out a new kind of format for this segment. I'm going to see how it goes. Instead of focusing on one thing pretty much for the entire segment, we're going to kind of go through several things. So if you notice a disconnect in the topics, that's the reason why. I thought we're just going to kind of, we're going to hit some things for a little while. I don't know how many we'll get to, but we're going to kind of go from one topic to another. So if you notice a certain disconnect between the topics, that's the reason why. It's actually intentional. And I'm hoping this kind of might move some of the discussion along and keep things interesting instead of perhaps belaboring a point a little too long. I don't know that I've done that before, but I'm sure I probably have. With all of the going ons that we have right now in the world and in here in the U.S., it's amazing how few people actually support what the government is doing. The fact that the Israelis obviously control the U.S. government. That is now beyond dispute. I mean, there's any reasonable person can look at what is happening, and that is literally the only answer. I mean, if America First was a thing, if American politicians were actually setting U.S. government foreign policy, they would essentially be doing the opposite of what they're doing now and what they've been doing for basically my entire life. Is obvious, is beyond a disputable doubt that the Israelis control the U.S. government and U.S. foreign policy. Now, that is not to say there's nobody in the U.S. who doesn't also support this action. Obviously, quite a few American Jews support it. That doesn't really tick me off. You know, a lot of people get upset about that, you know, and they look around and they're like, you know, all of these, you know, they hear about Miriam Adelson, you know, giving all this money to Trump to do Israel's bidding. And they get upset about that. I mean, I understand getting upset. I think the getting upset part, the anger about that is misdirected. Of course she's going to do that. This is just a natural thing of people watching out for their own. What I find upsetting about, well, contemptible, I'm looking for the right term. I think the proper thing is to look at the problem with the system itself. Of course, someone like Miriam Adelson is going to funnel, you know, buy American politicians to watch out for basically what someone like that is going to view as their home country and their own people. That's pretty normal. The problem is we have a system where people can do that. Does that make sense? In other words, it would still be a problem if you had Chinese people buying U.S. politicians and doing that. It points to a systemic problem. No, my problem is one of the groups, the few groups, because you look and it's like, how many people, regular people in this country, support this whole deal where the U.S. government does everything for Israel? Well, there is a small group, and that are these Christian evangelicals. See, you didn't think I was going to get to an actual Christian topic here. It's these evangelicals. I don't know how big of a group these people actually are. Because the media lies to us about everything. And I suspect the media is overblowing what percentage of the population consists of these evangelicals. These are largely older people, baby boomers. And I mean, you know, just life being life, those people are dying off every day. So I don't know, you know, because I've seen articles where they frame this in an attempt to distract from the fact of, you know, from the obvious fact that the U.S. government is bought and paid for and runs the bidding of Israel. And I see these media stories and they'll talk about, oh, well, that's because Trump is beholden to his evangelical Christian base instead of he's bought and paid for by Israeli Jews. I mean, that is what it is. Now, again, I don't know how big an actual segment this population is. I really don't. But it does exist. Setting that aside, it does exist. And we've gotten into this a little bit before, but I want to get back into it again. You know, the fundamental heresy in these worldview of these people, these Christian, evangelical, Christian Zionist people, who have essentially replaced Jesus Christ with the Jews, with this modern nation state of Israel. Now, I guess you have to realize these people are led by people that are obviously on the payroll. I mean, come on, you see some guy on TV or you see some guy in a mega church. I mean, he's getting a check. You know, somebody is telling me a while back, they said they saw a preacher on TV and he was going on about how we have to support Israel because, you know, the Bible. And I told that person flat out, I said, well, you know who's paying his check and you know why he's on TV. Do you think any quote unquote independent Christian television channel on your satellite or your cable, do you think they would ever let me come on and sit and have a discussion about Christianity, regardless of where we went with that? We could steer away from a topic like what we're covering right now and just do something more basic. But you're never going to see somebody like me on there. Why? Because these people are bought and paid for the same as the politicians are bought and paid for. You know, people talk about all you're doing is watching theater here. Well, that's because they're all paid actors. This is a production. And you know, these people who lead this Christian Zionist evangelical nonsense, they're led by people who are on the payroll. As such, I tend to have a little bit of sympathy. I try to reserve a little bit of sympathy for the rank and file that are just simply misled. Although, you know, they still have access to their Bibles. Anyway, I wanted to just touch again on why this is so flawed. Another thing that's, how can I put it? You know, it pisses me off. Is a lot of time anti-Christian non-believers aka Atheist Spurs, will sit here and conflate these people with Christianity as a whole, which is obviously ridiculous, but they will do that. So there's another problem with this distorted and incorrect worldview of these evangelical Christian Zionist people. Now, these people essentially hold the view, you know, from some verses from the Old Testament, that God blesses those who bless Israel. And we have to do this because they will tell you, I don't know how many times I've heard these people say it, God can't lie. God never goes back on his word. If you think that these words from all the way back here in the Old Testament don't apply today, then you don't believe anything God says, and Jesus doesn't even count. It's convoluted logic because it's a lie. But let's get into it. And now, when you get into this, first thing you have to do is to set aside the assumption that these people are making, that these people living over here in the Middle East have any connection beyond a tenuous one to Old Testament Bible people. I mean, Old Testament Israel, because it's the same name. They put the same name on. It's the same country. These modern day Jews having anything to do with the ancient, you know, with ancient Israel and the Bible, we'll set that aside. We're not going to get off into that woods today because it's irrelevant for what we're going to get to. If we give them that point, in other words, if we just go ahead and say, okay, sure, these are the same, these are the inheritors, these are the same people from back then, it doesn't matter. You see, you get off into the woods of the, well, yeah, these people are more Eastern European than anything from the Old Testament. We'll set that aside. We're not going to get off into that woods. And we'll just go ahead and give them that point. We'll just say that they somehow are genetically related to ancient Israel from the Bible. We'll give them that for a minute for the sake of argument. Because it doesn't, again, it doesn't matter. Now, it stretches this belief. How do I want to put it? This belief. They will tell you, you have to believe what they believe. They are correct, because if they are not correct, then that means God is a liar and God went back on his word. That's when you boil it down to its basis, when you get down to the nitty gritty, this is the essence of their argument, is that if they are not correct, that means that God is a liar. God promised Abraham, he promised the nation of Israel. And if that's not true today, then that means God lied, and that's impossible. That's the simplistic, boiled down aspect of their argument. The problem with this is multifold. A lot of this we've gotten into before. But it paints God as an idiot. You know, if that's the flip one side of their argument, then I would say the flip side of their own argument is that God is stupid. If they are correct, in other words, they're making the claim that if they are incorrect, then that means God is a liar. Well, I would say the flip side of their argument is if they are correct, then that means God is stupid. God is a moron. And which, of course, obviously he's not. Let's get down to that. I'm not going to sit here and read it out because, as I've said many times, this Christian-specific segment is geared towards people who are already believers. If you don't understand anything from the Bible, you're probably not going to get that much out of this because it's geared, this is more rightly, I think of it more of an advanced class. I'm assuming you're all believers and you're somewhat at least familiar with the Bible. So I'm not going to read the parable here, because I'm just assuming you're all familiar with it, but the parable that Jesus told of the wicked tenants of the vineyard, you know, who they refuse to pay. They refuse. They make a contract. They make a deal with the owner of the vineyard, and the owner of the vineyard stands back, holds up his end of the bargain. Only the other people, the wicked tenants of the vineyard, they never hold up their end of the bargain at all. They don't pay their commission. They don't pay their rent. The owner of the vineyard sends different servants to say, what are y'all doing? You need to hold up your end of the bargain. They beat and kill the servants. Ultimately, the owner of the vineyard sends his own son to these people to rebuke them and say, look, we had a deal. You're not holding up your end of the deal. But they kill the son as well, figuring, hey, this is the guy who's set to inherit the vineyard. If we kill him, this vineyard will be ours. We'll own it. We will be the owners of the vineyard. If you continue the parallel of what's being illustrated here, they are saying we ourselves will be God. We don't like what God is doing, so we ourselves will be God. Sounds very Talmudic, does it not? Jesus winds the parable up by asking the question. When the owner of the vineyard arrives with his army, with his men, what do you think he's going to do to the owners of the vineyard? It's a rhetorical question because the audience at that time and the audience now, with any sort of common sense, says the same thing. Well, he's going to slay them. You know, he's going to wipe them out, and he's going to give the vineyard to somebody who will. It's a pretty straight, easy thing to figure out because that's what anybody would do. Yet, if these evangelical Christian Zionist people are correct, then the answer is he's going to reward them. He's going to go ahead and just give them ownership. He's going to sign ownership of the vineyard. Remember, I'm not talking about the Jews here. They're doing what they're doing. I'm talking about these Christian, supposedly, because the word Christian here, Christian, Zionist, evangelical people, but, you know, this is the problem. They're supposed to be Christian. They're not Jews. They're Christian people. And according to their argument, the logic of their argument, if there is any, then the answer to Jesus' rhetorical question of what is the owner of the vineyard going to do is, well, he'll just sign ownership of the vineyard over to them. After all, he promised them. It requires just overlooking the fact that they never held up their end of the bargain. These people who would have you believe that if these are not God's chosen, if we don't bless Israel, he won't bless us because the Bible. Yeah, everything that God handed down to biblical Israel, remember, we're having to set aside the fact that these people's connection to biblical Israel is tenuous at best. We're setting all that aside, so don't be hitting me up with, but you should have gotten. We're not talking about that today. This, everything God handed down to ancient Israel in the Bible, these people only look at the reward. There's probably essentially, this is one of the essential reasons why they ignore the Old Testament for the most part, because if people were more familiar with it, they couldn't pull this scam on them. Everything God handed down to ancient Israel, actual ancient Israel in the Bible, was connected to a, as long as you do this, you know, everything, you know, I will bless you. I will make you numerous as sand in the sea and all of this stuff. As long as you do this. They never did that. I mean, for the most part, with a few exceptions, they pretty much never held up their end of the bargain. Thus, the parable of the wicked tenants. They never held up their end of the bargain. This is why I say the flip side of their own argument is that if this is still enforced, then God's a moron. Because if you yourself made a contractual deal with somebody and said, I will give you money as long as you do this, you hired an employee and said, I will pay you $5,000 a month if you do your job, and this is what amounts to your job, and that person never showed up every day, and when he did show up, he just sat there and looked at his phone and never once did his job. Are you going to keep paying him, or are you going to fire his ass? Anyway, they just ignore this fact. I find this amazing because, you know, I'm not a biblical scholar, you know. I just a guy who has, seeks the Lord and has, I like to think, some common sense. And common sense tells you if God made a deal with these people back then and said he would do certain things for them as long as they did this, and you have this long historical record of those people never holding up their end of the bargain, then how do you come out today and say, oh, well, you know, God's got to hold up his end of the bargain or he's a liar? No, they never, they ignore the as long as you will do this part. And it's intentional. As far as the leaders of this heresy, it's intentional. They're on the payroll, simple as. Now, I want to shift from this and get a little bit into God's will. You know, and now, you all know, I'm not going to get back into, as I've covered so many times, you know, understanding God's plan for man on this earth. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about, you'll talk to people, and this, and I think this is primarily a Protestant thing, but, you know, and they will talk about God's will, and then they pray about God's will all the time. And to the point that God is essentially, when you talk to these people enough, and it's an easy thing. Look, I guess I need to set aside here, footnote here, if you would. You know, this is an easy thing to get caught up in. I've done it myself in years past. You know, I speak as somebody from experience when I was more ignorant years ago that I had myself had fallen into this trap. But when you when you will talk to these people and you will run into these certain people. And when they talk about God's will, they're not talking about a grand plan of things. They're talking as though God is deciding which pair of shoes they put on this morning. You know, I'm wearing this. Actually, I look down. Y'all wouldn't know. I look down. I'm wearing the Zelensky t-shirt today. I got the green t-shirt on. I look like Zelensky out here. I just need to not shave or something. You know, I put on this color of t-shirt this morning because God willed it. You see, God's will for a lot of these people is literally everything. Like God is, instead of having created a system that is more or less, you know, autonomous, self-functioning here that we live in while we're in time, God is instead micromanaging every transaction in their lives. Do I want to have 2 cups of coffee this morning or 3? God decided I would have 3. It becomes this ridiculous. Of course, it is a trap because when inevitably bad things happen in their lives, who are they going to blame? If God told you what pair of socks to put on this morning, and then your wife gets killed in a car wreck, then he must be responsible for that too, right? It was God's will. See, what starts off as a crutch for their faith, and this is what it is, this assigning God's will to every tiny aspect of your life, every little detail, every minutia of the story you're living, it is a crutch for lack of faith. It is, and that's hard for people to hear, and some of you probably are doing this as well. And again, it's okay. I have myself. But the reality is that this whole thing where, you know, everything that happens in your life down to every detail is God micromanaging. This is like Calvinism on steroids. It's a crutch at its fundamental level. What this is, and you need to recognize it if you're doing this, it is a crutch for your own lack of faith. Well, God, you know, everything God did, God did it. It's God's will. I stubbed my toe. That was God's will for me to stub my toe. If I hadn't have stubbed my toe, then the butterfly effect would have kicked in and the world might have ended or whatever. This is something I encourage people. I would encourage you to wean yourself off of. That's, look, there's nothing wrong if you want to give God praise and glory for the things in your life. You should do that. If you're tempted to think, well, what if this is just something that came about and, you know, it's not like God's micromanaging me. What's wrong with praising God for all things? You don't, he gave you life. If something good comes around in your life, no, it doesn't necessarily mean it came around because God was micromanaging your life and decided to toss you a dog biscuit, to toss you a little reward. Doesn't necessarily mean that. But the fact that you are alive itself is a blessing from God. He has given you this time and something good has happened. There's nothing wrong with praising God. But you don't want, you got to wean yourself of this crutch for lack of faith. And understand, and I think a lot of it is this desire to absolve ourselves of any responsibility for our own decisions. It's God's fault. It's God's fault. He's responsible for it, not me. My view has evolved and come to the point of, I understand, I need to make the decisions I need to make. The things that I can't make decisions about because it's out of my hands, that I call, quote unquote, that is in God's hands. In other words, I have no way to affect it. So I just, it's essentially me when I say that's in God's hands. It's like when Jesus said in the Lord, instructed in the Lord's Prayer, thou will be done. May God's will be done. Now, what I kind of wanted to get into is not even so much of what I've talked about here. It's important also, I think, to understand that as a Christian believer, you know, God is not, I don't mean to imply that your Father, the Lord, does not care about you, that he's indifferent to you, to your problems and to your suffering. I don't mean to imply that at all. But it's important to remember the roles here. And to remember that God's actual plan, his will, involves that does not center around you or me. We, individual people, we may be God's children, but we're not the center of the universe. Everything God's will, God's plan, does not revolve around my personal happiness or what I happen to want right now in this moment in time. We have to understand and say, see, if God's will, this, for instance, and I'm not prophesying here by any stretch, I'm using just as an example. If God's will is for the U.S. empire to be destroyed, and as a part of that destruction, there's total economic collapse, and a third of the U.S. population basically suffers, and a lot of them starve to death, and there's rampant diseases, and do you think that's not going to affect you? This is why Jesus, in the Lord, when he was instructing the disciples how to pray, this is the importance of that line, thou will be done. The Lord's will be done. Even the unspoken part of that is, even if a part of his will is that my life sucks, then we don't want that part. We want God's will. This is why we get sucked into this incorrect belief that we're the center of the universe, because we want God's will to always involve, I mean, my life's really good and comfortable. Maybe the whole world is burning down around me. But see, I'm on this little island and God has protected me and I don't have any suffering. That'd be nice. And perhaps he might do that for us. You, me, whatever. That'd be great. I hope he does. I really do. None of us want hard times or suffering. But the attitude that Jesus instructed us for with, may the Lord's will be done, with thy will be done, is this is keeping the relationship in the correct context. God's will be done. Not my own. May the Lord's will, may God's plan be done. Even if that involves my life goes to crap and I suffer and maybe I even die as a part of God's will being done, then so be it. The problem, aside from just being factually incorrect, the problem with getting these roles twisted and thinking you're the center of the universe, getting this attitude that you're the center of the universe and God's will needs to cater to your happiness, is it's getting the roles skewed. It's getting the roles reversed. Who's in charge? If God's will has to equal, basically, he's catering to your every want and need and desire and your comfort, then he is your servant. You may not put that, you may not word it that way, and you may be tempted to, you know, protest and indignation, but if your attitude is that that's what God's will has to be, your own comfort, your own desires, whatever you want, then you're essentially have made, you've cast God in your heart, you've cast God into the role of servant. This, no. This is getting the roles reversed. This is what Jesus said, put this line here, instructed this line, thou will be done. Regardless of what that is. Not thou will be done as long as I like it. You know, not that God's will be done as long as it's convenient for me. God's will be done, period. Even if it means unpleasantries, hard times and hardships for myself. You see why faith is in order here, because none of us want that. I do not look, I'm not sitting here trying to act like, you know, I'm ready to just bring on the hard times. I'm not implying that at all. I don't want no hard times. I want to live a normal, happy life and do okay. That's what you want too. That's a normal thing. But the reality is, God has plans that are way bigger than you. We're all essentially, you know, we have a role here in our own lives, and we carry out this role dutifully. Well, you look at the ants, you know, you look at these ants, when you see ants and they're dutifully going about their business, you know, they go out and they gather the food up, you know, because we have these, of course, we have these horrible fire ants. I'm not using them as an example. They're an abomination. I hate them damn things. But we have harvester ants. We call them red ants here, you know, and they're those big red ants. And you watch them, and they dutifully leave the den. They go out, and they go all over. They make trails and highways out there. And they dutifully go about their business. You know, you see one of them, and he's got a piece of a bug, and another one, and he's got a piece of grain, and they're carrying this along, and they're heading back to the den. They're carrying out their duties. Now, and carrying out their duties, some of these ants get stepped on. They get stepped on. They get mashed. You know, birds or something come along and eat them. I mean, you know, things happen. Horny toads will eat on these things. We don't hardly have horny toads anymore because of damn fire ants. But you know, horny toads eat them. Some of these ants run into misfortune. And the remaining ants don't miss a lick. They just keep carrying out their duty. You know, these people are somebody standing there stepping on them. Some kid sitting there frying them with a magnifying glass. And they don't stop. They don't slow down. They just look for a way around that to keep on doing what they got to do. And that's essentially, that's what we do. We just keep carrying it on. We got to keep carrying on what we got to do. Anyway, the point I want to make is always remember that God's will is bigger than you. Don't get the roles twisted up. Don't get things reversed. God is not your servant. He's our Father. He is very merciful, and he does care for you. He's not indifferent to you. But you also have to realize that he has things going on that are way bigger than you. And those are more important, even than your life. It is more important. It just is, and this is why you said, well, God's will be done. The Lord's will be done. Overall, because as Christian believers, at the end of the day, we all accept that we're going to leave this world. We're preparing for that. This is what we're doing. You know, so we have to be prepared to just put that into our mindset. The Lord's will be done. And everything doesn't center around you or me, our personal lives. There is a bigger plan. God is way bigger than all of us. That bring me to a third and final thing I think we'll touch on today. And that is, you know, in your prayers. We read in the Bible, you know, to pray continuously, you know, and I think people misread that a little bit, you know, to pray continuously, petition God continuously. And because what happens, especially in our times today, is that turns into an endless requesting, you know, for God to give us stuff, you know, to do something for us. This too leads to getting the roles wrong, you know, to start getting, you know, start treating God as though he's supposed to do stuff for us continuously. In our prayers, what I jotted down here for a line is, don't pray for that which you can do yourself. The old saying, the good Lord helps those that help themselves. There's truth to that old saying. You know, do the things that you can do. You know, get up today and make the decisions you need to make. People sit around, like I said earlier, that a lot of this stuff is people, I think, want to offload the responsibility for making their own decisions. They want to offload that and make that into God's responsibility. And it just, I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. You're responsible for your decisions, good, bad, in between. You're responsible for your decisions, and people want to offload that. Before you pray for something, ask, is this something you can do yourself? This also relates again back to, you know, not making God your servant. If you can do it yourself, then why are you bothering God about it? You know, why are you praying when you yourself, you can just do it yourself. Just do it. Why are you bothering God about it? This, you know, in the Bible it's written, your faith doesn't mean much if you look at somebody and say, well, go, you know, somebody who's starving, and you say, go and hunger no more. May God bless you. Go and hunger no more, when you yourself could feed them. See, your faith doesn't mean anything. You could have fed them yourself. This is why this is what's being illustrated in the Bible when they're talking about this. You could feed that person yourself, and you're essentially saying, may God bless you and you hunger no more. Give the man a hamburger. I mean, what? Just not McDonald's, for goodness sake. No, when you can do it yourself, why are you saying, well, go and hunger no more? In other words, may God feed you, but you don't want to get the hamburger out of you. So you buy that man a meal, but you're not going to do that. But, you know, hey, I hope, I'll pray for you that God will give you a hamburger, give you something to eat. And you got the ability to do it yourself. You see, this is a form of twisting prayer into an excuse. Now, we've talked about prayer, you know, incorrect prayers, a crutch and things like that. This is the error of using prayer as an excuse not to inconvenience yourself. You know, well, I pray that God will, you know, help this man go do this, that, or the other. And you have the ability to do that. You just don't want to mess with it. You want God to do it for you. I did my part. I prayed for that person. Now, look, you know, you might pray that the homeless person on the street can go find a home, but you can't provide a home for every homeless person. I'm not trying to get that all twisted up. But that which you can do yourself, you should do. You know, you don't get in the error of just trying to turn prayer into an excuse to not do anything. Don't pray for the things that you can do yourself. How many people will sit here and, I don't know, pray for you? I've seen people, you know, these. I don't sit around and watch TV preachers. I really don't. I bring them up because they exist. And I have seen enough of them in years gone by to pretty much, I get what these guys are saying, because they kind of all say the same thing. Their doctrine hasn't changed a whole lot. And I see these guys, encourage people to pray for that new house, pray for that new car, pray for that wife you're going to find who's going to make your life happy. If you want a new house, you need to sit down and figure out, okay, well, if I'm going to have to borrow the money to do that, then how much money I'm going to have? A house I'm looking for is in this price range. I need to have, you know, this percentage to put down payment. Okay, how do I get from where I'm at now to where I acquire that down payment? You know, this is putting things into action. And the truth is, if you're looking for God to bless that, this is the best way to increase the odds of perhaps God choosing to bless your efforts. Sitting around praying day in, day out that tomorrow you're going to wake up and somebody's going to knock on your door and God moved them to hand you a set of keys to your new house, you're going to get pretty disappointed. Why would God do that? You know, I mean, could God technically do that? Well, yes, of course, he's God. He can do whatever he wants. But it raises the question of why would he do that? You're not lifting, you're sitting there praying to God over every day for your new house, and you're not making any effort to make that happen. Another way of twisting these rules, waiting for the servant to come do it for you. You know, make up a plan. Make the decisions you need to make. If I want a house, I'm going to have at least this much for a down payment. Okay, I don't have that much. So how can I cut expenses? How can I get some extra money coming in? What can I do to get to reach that goal? And again, you put those, you make that effort, you increase the odds that perhaps God will bless you along the way to being able to do that. Because you're putting an effort in. Are you just sitting around on your ass waiting for God to hand it to you? More than likely, you're headed for disappointment. It's just a fact. It comes back to make the decision. Look at yourself. One of the ways I've found to deal with stress, because, you know, I've been through two different rounds of two different kinds of cancer. And, you know, one of the things they you find out early and they'll tell you about, and I'm very skeptical of everything they tell you about anything, and you know my feelings about the healthcare industry. One of the things I do agree with, and one of the things they'll tell you right away, is any form, you know, stress releases these hormones, these chemicals in your body that feeds the cancer. And even if you don't have cancer, it leads to all kinds of health issues. It's very unhealthy. Stress is very unhealthy. And one of the ways I have found to deal with stress, anxiety, whatever, is to look at when I find myself in that state of mind, I stop and I ask myself, okay, I'm feeling anxious about this. What decisions do I need to make here? What choices do I need to make? Am I agonizing? Am I putting off a choice? What are my options? What choices? What decisions do I need to make? And then just drop the hammer and pick one. Quit agonizing over it. Pick a decision and move forward. If it's wrong, it's wrong. It's better to go on and make the decision than sit there agonizing. I'm not saying, you know, don't weigh your options carefully and make a mindful, but at some point in time, you got to quit dilly-dallying. You know, your options are limited. Maybe there's no really good options here, but pick one and move forward. Or, on the other hand, if the answer is there is no decision you make here, you're in other words, you're agonizing about something you can't do anything, you're powerless to do anything about, then say that's in God's hands. Hand it off. Quit thinking about it. It's not real for you. I mean, it's real, maybe a real problem in the world, but if it's something that you cannot make a decision and have an effect on, then just say that's in God's hands because you can't do anything about it and move on. Just let it go. If it's something you can make a decision on, then by all means, make a decision, you know? If you're, you know, praying to God, you know, to find your dream husband or your dream future wife or whatever, and you know, you're not doing anything to go try to find that person or try to meet somebody, just going to drop in, just mail order it in. I don't know. Anyway. Yeah, don't pray for things that you can do yourself. Ask yourself first, what do I need to do? If this is what I'm wanting, if this is what I'm desiring, okay, what do I need to do? What choices do I need to make to get me closer to that goal? And this increases the odds that God will bless that effort. He may not, too. And in fact, he may cut your path off. You may think that's what you want. He may cut that path off and not allow it. Because it's a bad choice. Or he may let you go on and make a bad choice. You learn from that lesson. You learn that lesson. There's a whole lot of different things that can transpire with these things. He may not allow that to happen, and you may be disappointed. And then years down the road, you look back and you're like, "Whoo!" At the time, you're like, "Man, why did God didn't allow that to happen? Why did God cut my path off from that? I just don't understand." And then like that goes from that to years later, you look back and you're like, "Whoo! Thank you, Jesus, for keeping me. I thought I wanted that." Looking back, I'm sure glad I didn't do that. Anyway, we're going to wrap up on that note. Hope you got something out of the whole show, especially our Christian specific segment. This is the whole reason I do this show. I hope you got something out of it. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson will be here tomorrow with his Orthodox Nationalist show, and he'll wrap up our week as always on Thursdays with his Daily Nationalist installment. I hope you have a great week. As always, I hope you got something out of the show, and thus I hope I'll see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.